This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Judith Jacobs. We're going to dissect Budget 2022 today and discuss if conservation of the environment was prioritized in a meaningful way in this year's budget. And joining me to do this is Sharon Raj. He's a Central Committee member of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Welcome, Sharon. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. Between economic crisis and health crisis, I'm saying that I'm surviving at the moment.
Aren't we all, Sharon? What a time we're living in. But, let's talk about what was mentioned in the budget with regard to the environment, right? So in the recently tabled budget, the third focus, which was outlined by our finance minister, was, and I'm quoting here, a prosperous and sustainable economy, right? So he said that the government is committed to strengthen its development agenda so that growth remains sustainable and inclusive. And besides that, Budget 2022 will continue to support the implementation of the 12th Malaysia Plan, which prioritizes things like economic rejuvenation, prosperity, inclusivity, and of course, sustainability towards a prosperous Keluarga Malaysia. So under this focus, right, of the sustainability agenda, what aspects that were outlined, that you liked and that you sort of support from Budget 2022?
Well, there's not really much of good stuff to be excited about when you look from an environmental perspective, especially in the times when climate crisis is hitting us hard. But there are a few that I'd like to highlight. One particularly will be the empowering the local tribes to become the patrollers. In fact, before this program was introduced several years ago, the Orang Asli people, whether you talk about in Semenanjung or whether in Borneo, even in Kalimantan for that matter also, they were the people that was actually fighting against the poachers, but they were not paid and they were protecting our forests. In fact, they were the one defending against illegal logging. And this has been recognized some many years ago by making them patrollers and giving them allowances. And now it has been further extended by 1,000 more patrollers. And we have to recognize the fact that they have been doing a great job in protecting the tigers, in protecting the tapes and so on. And that was one of the very important part that I like. On the second part would be the SME support to transition to low carbon economy. The grants, matching grants that will be given up to Bank Negara Malaysia. That is definitely much welcome indeed. Why I'm saying that so, if you look that Malaysia has been signing too many free trade agreements without considering the environmental aspect. So a lot of our manufacturers, they have to sell things at a low price to compete with low wage countries like Cambodia, Vietnam. Now you're talking about Myanmar and so on. And the cost of transition from the dirty modes of production to a cleaner modes of production costs money. And these manufacturers does not want to lose their margin of profit, so they will have to raise the cost. And when you raise the cost, you lose customers and the economy actually tanks. You lose your foreign exchange, you lose exports. And so this support is actually vital to help them in to keep the cost of transition in a way quite low and also keep us competitive. So I do welcome that. But one thing that needs to be added together with technical support, because transitioning to new technologies, green technologies, they're quite very new for a lot of our local manufacturers. So if the technical support does not come, the funds will not really materialize because they might buy the equipment, but they may not know how to use it and they will be on the losing edge.
Okay. All right. So those were some of the things that you were quite happy about. But let's talk about what perhaps were missed opportunities. What do you think was not addressed, that should have been as far as you're concerned?
Well, if I want to talk about what was not addressed, the list goes on. We may actually be sitting here for the weeks. But I will talk about things that they have mentioned, but would I say half-baked or what's in a wrong method. Firstly, instead of bailing out the zoos, we should be closing down the zoos. Right? Because all this, why we have this narrative that zoo protects them, it ensures the continuity of the species and so on. But in fact, when we look, when the zoos were closed, most of these animals enjoyed privacy, particularly the big mammals, and they were mating, and you had continuity of species, which is breeding and mating. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the zoo did otherwise than what they were so, and they were not sustainable when tourists does not come in. All right? So it is high time we should have actually been closing down our zoos, incorporating these animals back into the forest to repopulate the forest rather than claiming that we need to take them out of the forest or else they go, the population declines. So zoo was one place that we should have done things differently, which is we should have closed the zoo instead of bailing them out. The second portion of it would have been the public transport, which I'm quite very disappointed because the fact they have actually raised the My 30 to My 50. This is quite contradicting because government have made electric vehicle tax-free. The private car sales have received a sales tax exemption for another 6 months. But the public transport, you increase it by 20 ringgit a month. And that is actually a significant amount for a lot of people in Klang Valley who have lost their income and who relies on public transport to move around. In fact, a lot of Malaysians do not actually own private vehicles. Although the amount of car registered and the population are near same, but if you look at the numbers of license holder, it's actually only half of the population. And if you, it's only half of the adult population. And when you look, there are some people who have 2-3 cars. And when you factor in all of that, there's a lot of Malaysian adults who does not have private cars. Mm. Okay, and they have been victimized to pay more, but new car owners have been rewarded. So you see that issues cropping up, and there was no form of major restructuring to improve public transport. In fact, if you look where most of low-income community in Klang Valley are, they are in Selayang, in Gombak, some of them at Nilai, in Sepang. And some of these areas, they are not served by RapidCab, but they're served by a different third-party operator. Mm. Right? And they cannot use My 50 or My 30 in those buses. So they have to pay from out of their pocket. Right? So the government should have restructured, in fact, incorporate all these private bus operators within the RapidKL network. So people, when they buy this My 30 or My 50, they actually use everything. Because I do know a friend who works with PSM. When she takes the bus from Batu Cave to work in PSM headquarters in Brickfield, she will have to pay twice. Okay, one, she is using the Rapid KL bus within Kuala Lumpur. But to get from Batu Cave into KL first, she will have to use a private company where she will have to fork out of hand. So that's where things are happening. And this mismatch was not addressed. And so public transport was really the biggest loser in this entire budget. Now, on the third part would be on some of the fine details of certain policies was not really sustainable. So in fact, I dispute when the government say they use the word of sustainable. One of it, when you look in the agriculture sector, where government is giving RM 1.5 billion for subsidies, right? And when you look how the subsidies are distributed, they are given to private companies. These are part of the Dasar Penswastaan, where government divested its social responsibility on protecting agriculture to the private sector. So the private seed companies, the private fertilizer companies, they have been given the subsidy directly to them. Okay, so it's not goes to the farmer for that matter. So the subsidy in any way does not go to the farmer, rarely it goes. Right? And this de-incentivized the farmers to use non-synthetic fertilizer, to use their own seeds, right? So if I'm a farmer, I kept some of my crops and I reproduce my seed in a sustainable way. I don't use industrial chemicals. I use natural control of rodents. I use natural controls of it. So these are actually very sustainable to the to our planet. Mm-hmm. In fact, synthetic fertilizer is actually one of the key pollutants to rivers, right? Because once they use in the paddy fields and so on, it leaks back into the river. And by the time you reach the urban area, the water becomes very dirty, right? And now this is the practice that is there. So if the subsidy is converted, as a voucher program to the farmers, right? So now the farmers have the ability to cash out that voucher if they use sustainable method. Mm. If I make my own seeds, I don't have to purchase it, I can cash out that voucher. If I don't use synthetic fertilizer, it becomes a cash. So you incentivize people to become self-sustainable rather to be dependent on the private corporation for synthetic fertilizers or industrial seeds for that matter. And another very much detail will be butchering the labor laws in the names of environment. One of it will be the social impact procurement, the government social impact procurement. Unknown to many, this is actually executed by MAGIC. For those who doesn't know, MAGIC is an agency under Ministry of Finance based in Cyberjaya, looking after startups and entrepreneurship, right? And when you look in the details of this government social impact policy, one of the things for the benefits you get, say if MAGIC recognizes you as a social startup, and you can actually go and be a part of e-perolehan, which is the government procurement system. And one of the exemptions you will get is you do not have to submit your KWSP, your KWSP payments to your employees, to the government, right? And in fact, this regulation in E-Perolehan, where every government procure tender or contractors wants to get government procurement, must show their compliance to labor law, okay? Now, that has been exempted. Okay, and that exemption goes into a long way for labor abuse. In fact, there is a lot of labor abuse in the government supply chains. When you look at laundry service, cleaning service, and to let you know, one of the least of social impact in the fine details of it is laundry and cleaning service. And laundry and cleaning service for schools is actually the highest amount of labor abuse in this country, which is what PSM is also fighting for. Mm. And now we find they are using the environmental, sustainability, the social impact kind of things to skew around all this labor law, to deregulate the labor law. So any companies can come in, claim I'm environmentally friendly, but does not pay KWSP to the workers, can go on doing labor abuse, can appoint undocumented migrant, I can overwork, underpay, but I will get government tender. So these kinds of minor things are all over the budget. Mm-hmm. Of course, Zafar gave us the rosy picture and everything, but when you go to the fine details, so this is where we say the devil's in the details. Actually, there is pure devil in the details.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Sharon Raj. She's a central committee member from Parti Socialist Malaysia. We're talking about the environmental sustainability agenda that was mentioned in the budget. You know, the finance minister said that we are working towards a prosperous and sustainable economy. I think Sharon thinks that not enough is being done. And when we come back after this quick break, we're going to find out more about his thoughts on the EV sector, you know, which the government plans to provide full exemption from import and excise duties as well as sales tax for EVs. We're going to get his thoughts on that after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing. This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Sharon Raj. She's a Central Committee member from Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're discussing whether the environmental sustainability aspect was truly on the agenda for Budget 2022. Of course, Budget 2022 was just tabled last Friday by our finance minister. And, you know, before the break, Sharon sort of outlined, you know, what he liked and what he thought were some of the missed opportunities that were not addressed in the budget. You know, so in terms of the allocations, right, Sharon, do you think that what has been sort of like allocated generally seek to provide relief to the symptoms rather than sort of tackling, you know, all the root causes of our environmental degradation, especially, you know, degradation of the natural ecosystems?
Yes, that's actually true. But in fact, what you said was also considerably an understatement. We are seeing the symptoms of the serious overdevelopment left behind by the past. If we look, one of the things that is mentioned by the finance minister, which the nature conservation project, such as Penang Hill, then you talk about Tasik Chinim, and then the floods in Melaka. Well, we all aware that last year there was a huge amount of illegal logging or legal logging, whichever narrative that we find. But entire Tasik Chinim lost a huge amount of forest, and that is the amount that we are going to spend now to fix it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this we are actually paying for. And the other thing, when you talk about overcoming floods in Melaka, I'm based in the state of Melaka, and flood is very common. It's part of parcel of life. Anyone who says lives in Melaka but doesn't know flood, then he's not from Melaka. And in fact, this flood has been coming by two things. One, because of climate change. So instead of water, the rainwater emptying into Durian Tunggol Dam or the inner part of Melaka is now emptying at the coastal part of Melaka. You're talking about Ayer Keroh, Kota Melaka and so on. And then now you also have huge amount of reclamation project, which has been sanctioned by the previous Barisan government. And these have reduced the rate of the river emptying into the sea. Because this reclamation project is actually very close to the coastal area. In fact, it expanded the river mouth. And it is also reducing the rate of the water, the river water leaving the river into the sea.
Okay.
And this, whenever couples with rain, the amount of water rises up too fast because the amount of water going into the sea have reduced and causing us flood. So what we're exactly fixing is a problem. And a problem. We created the problem and now we're trying to solve it. And this is actually demanding huge amount of public resources. But you guess who made the profit? The developers made the profit. The loggers made the profit. They are taking away the profit. But the cost is now subsidized by public taxes. In fact, When we look at this year's budget, it's one of the biggest budget, and it also, the deficit is continuously expanding. And we cannot be able to fund education, healthcare, because of the competition for taxes and the competition for taxes for conservation program. Mm. And most of this conservation program is fixing a problem left behind by the capital. And we do not have the spine to actually tax this loggers profit. We don't have the spine to tax all of the large developers who have done scrupulous overdevelopment, but the cost is bare from it. So this is a typical example of privatizing profit and socializing the cost. And such things is actually true, and this will be true for the next few decades, in fact, because a lot of the problems have been left behind and they are slowly showing the impact. This will be our automotive policy, our adoption to highways, and our lack of accessibility to pedestrians. So because of that, people are dependent on cars. You need a lot of subsidy to subsidize the petrol. And this burden is going to continue on. So we have not solved the root problem. In fact, we are going around patching up the symptom. So in long-term short, the budget, when it talks on environmental conservation, is basically giving a painkiller to a heart attack. Instead of solving the heart attack, we are just trying to administer with painkillers or the pain suppressor. But one day, it is going to get so bad that the country is going to die. It's going to be crippled under pollution, under inability to handle the pollution. Over to you, Julia.
Okay, that's not a very good picture that you're painting there, Sharon, unfortunately, but I do agree with you. You know, I think it's more, relieving of symptoms, right, rather than actually, like we said, like tackling the root causes. But, you know, one other huge part of the budget, which I hope to discuss with you, of course, is the plans for the government to provide full exemption from import and excise duties, as well as sales tax for EVs, right, to support the development of the local EV industry. What are your thoughts on that? You know, what is your take on all of that?
Personally, I'm quite divisive with the electric vehicle policy itself. Prior to the budget, Malaysia does have a substantial amount of tax exemption for the electric vehicles. In fact, before the budget, only about 20-30% of the car price was actually taxed. This is very different compared to other petrol cars where you have tax up to over 100%, right? Now, when you have reduced this taxation, including road tax. And why I'm saying road tax matter, if you look, when you buy any car during the first year road tax is actually incorporated. And for a petrol car, it's usually in the range of 0.12% or 0.2%, within that range. But for electric vehicles, they are very powerful equipments, and their road tax is actually quite substantial. In fact, there can be a few thousands, even for a normal car, right? So when you look at the price tag before the budget, about 1% plus of the one is including the first year road tax, and the road tax was quite high. So when you make road tax tax, abolish the road tax, you abolish all kinds of taxes, you make it tax-free, the price actually came down substantially. And in fact, you can see the price difference somewhere around the range of 20% to one-third. Mm-hmm. And this is makes big difference. One of the examples, you look at the BMW iX, which was recently introduced. In fact, it was hot selling even with the tax itself. So now without the tax, it has fallen somewhere in the range of 250,000 to 270,000. So you capture a bigger pool of it. Nissan Leaf will be dropping below 250,000. So for the first time, we are seeing a car which is coming very close to 100,000. But will this all shift the entire consumer market towards EV car? Not really. Because when you look, two-thirds of our car sales in Malaysia are below 100,000. And they are predominated by what we call the 2M and 3J, the two Malaysian companies, Proton Perdua, and the three Japanese, which is Nissan, Honda, as well as Toyota. So two-thirds of the Malaysian car sales is actually below 100,000. And all of these cars, although they have dropped in price, but they are still largely within the luxury segment, within what we call the Toyota, Altis, Camry, and kind of above. Okay. So the upper tier and so on. But anybody who plans to buy a car more than 200,000, say, it makes no viable for them to actually get a petrol car anymore. Because when you look for an electric vehicle car, there's no maintenance. Your electricity in your home, if you charge using your home residential tariff, it is way cheaper than petrol on per kilometer basis. And you have tax. So basically, your car, the only thing you have to pay on every year will be your annual maintenance and your home electricity, which won't be a bump, right? Yeah. So we can see that electric vehicle sales are taking off. But when we look at the amount foregone, the amount of tax revenue foregone will be huge. And if we look at the amount of revenue foregone since the EEV, the energy efficient vehicle, or the hybrid tax exemption until now, will be in tens of billions of ringgit already. And the electric vehicle, which I have heard will be lasting until the end of this decade. So Malaysia will be losing tens of billions of ringgit. In fact, in my rough estimation, it will cross 30 billion ringgit. That's a huge amount of money which could have been used for public transport, which will be a missed opportunity. And in fact, the loss of revenue contributes to our huge deficit. But then again, for all those people who are looking forward to get an electric vehicle car, this is definitely a matter of celebration for them. In fact, a lot of people over the weekends when they heard this news, they have been approaching their existing car dealers, which they have raised a booking. Usually towards the end of the year, a lot of people try to buy cars. These are usually T40, not the bottom 60% of the country. And for this T40, economy recession doesn't exist for them. So I know what I'm telling sounds very contradicting to the reality, but this is the T40. Yeah? Sure. So they have canceled their cars with their existing dealers. In fact, they are making a lot of inquiries to companies who are selling EVs. And the bigger beneficiary here will be Sime Darby Motors. Sime Darby Motors, which is a principal dealer for Porsche, they have Porsche Taycan. Quite upper hand, and they actually, it's a sport car, but the only sport car below the price of 100,000 because of the tax exemption. And now it has fallen below half a million. The BMW is there. Sime Darby is bringing in Hyundai Kona soon. They're going to bring in the Jaguar I-Pace electric vehicle. In fact, they have over weekends have said they're bringing in the Range Rover EV. So they have lined up huge amount of models of electric vehicle car. Because Sime Darby actually is the principal dealer for a lot of foreign marquees in Malaysia. And they will be the biggest beneficiary. And the other one would be the electric vehicle chargers. And particularly this Jom Charge Sdn Bhd. Jom Charge Sdn Bhd is one of the supporting EV charging system. And they are one of their main clients is actually Sime Darby Motors. In fact, they are the one assisting Sime Darby's Porsche customers to actually install EVs at home. And they are actually one of the main EV installers in the country. So, but they are quite SME, so I won't really say they profit in a very big way, but the increase in sales of EV in a way will resonate to them when we look at. And the other thing when you look is this electric vehicle charger system, the 2,500 tax relief. This is what you call an overkill, right? If someone's buying a car for 250,000 and you're telling me you can't afford 2,500 to install a home charger, and in fact, most homes charger installer won't cost you that much. Most of the existing company, before the budget itself, they already provide complimentary installation. They provide you with the EV charging box and so on. There is a unnecessary stuff. So they were actually absorbing a small portion of it. In fact, now what government has done is when by announcing this, they'll give 2,500 exemption. A lot of these companies, car companies, are going to cancel their subsidies to the consumer, and they will transfer it to the people. They will say, I'll give you that receipt and you claim your tax exemption. So what used to be free is now going to be made unfree, and that will improve the profit margin of the car. So in fact, the 2,500 for tax relief for electric vehicle in charger installation is unnecessary. It's really unnecessary. In fact, since most of them are already giving the box, the installation cost, even in the most complicated case, will be slightly over 1,000. And this 2,500 now gives the motivation for car companies to increase, or even for the installers to increase for that matters. But either way, when you look at collectively, the government has shown a clear signal that we are moving towards electric vehicle. And it's high time the 60% of the population, sorry, the 60% of the car sellers, which is the two Malaysians and three Japanese, they need to think about electric vehicle. Proton, Produa, Toyota, and so on. In fact, Toyota a few days ago in Japan actually fought with the Prime Minister of Japan, trying to drag their leg in electric vehicles. So if Japan is not getting, I doubt Toyota Malaysia is going to do anything different than that. But either ways, we have sent a strong signal. But there's a lot of things we need to do in electric vehicles to get it kick-starting. Of course, we have made it tax-free. I don't foresee Zafiro pulling out just because of my criticism. But I do think an overkill, which is the 2,500 tax gift, need to be withdrawn. In fact, it is actually very regressive. You should not be subsidizing the T40 already. In fact, tax-free, the amount of foregone revenue is just way a lot. And in fact, they are celebrating. The T40 once by EV are celebrating. They're quite happy. Over to you, Julian.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess, you know, the argument, of course, would be that we need to go in that direction somehow, right? And this is probably a start, you know, to moving towards that direction, moving more people towards getting electric vehicles. But yeah, it's going to be a long process, I think, and, you know, very slow one at that. But that's the problem, isn't it? We don't have much time. We are facing a climate crisis. We're already in the midst of it, whether we want to admit it or not. COP26 is happening. We know that, you know, the emissions have gotten higher since the COP in Paris. Yeah. So I guess, you know, we need really more. Yeah, I guess there was a lot of misses in the budget, especially when it came to environmental sustainability. That's my take on it, lah. I don't know how you feel about that.
When we look at it, yes, there is a lot of misses. In fact, we have been given one a lifetime opportunity, actually one in 100 years, because last time the global had such pandemic was in 1900s. Mm. That was more than 100 years ago. And we have the opportunity to reset. In fact, I was looking forward to the budget to have a lot of sustainability agenda. And there is a lot of non-fiscal tools the government could have used, such as energy efficiency regulation, moving their procurement away towards green procurements. In fact, many people don't know that the government of Malaysia actually consumed 10% of the national electricity. So any energy efficiency policy by the government, in fact, their transition to become zero energy buildings, by government buildings, will actually have a big impact over our national carbon, because 10%, our hospitals, our schools, universities, Putrajaya, this would actually go a long way. In fact, none of this was mentioned, but there was a lot of greenwashing. When you talk about the voluntary carbon market was going on, you look at the voluntary carbon market, it's basically, I make any reduction in carbon, and that reduction, I can sell it to a polluter. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it negates. So when you look at across all these, there are a few things that we can be excited about. Of course, people who are looking at electric vehicles have a lot of to excite about. But then from PSM perspective, we see that electric vehicles are not the way to decarbonize fast. If you look in the case of Norway, although they'll be banning electric vehicle cars in another few years, but vast proportion of their cars, because cars are long-term assets. Some people hold it up to 30 years. Even my father still has a car which is more than 30 years old. He loves his car, right? And so you don't expect them to shift overnight. So, but this car does not pollute if you do not use public transport, right? So the shift should be towards the public transport, and it reduces the wear and tear on our road. It reduces the burden of fuel subsidy. So we need to look at the entire picture, and all of that was definitely not captured. In fact, the good Samaritans, our real environment, people who use public transport, people who actually brings their own Tupperware, people who actually switch off their fan when they're not using, these are the real people who are fighting climate change in their day-to-day life. And these people were not rewarded in any way, and the budget have failed to actually capture. So I was quite disappointed, because Sabri did say there'll be a wow factor for everybody. Mm. But for the environmentalists, the only wow factor is, wow, can you do any more damage than this? That was the only wow we had.
Okay. Oh, dear. Well, I guess, you know, hopefully, I don't even know what to say, Sharon. I mean, it is what it is, right? And we have to, you know, deal with this for the next year and just see what we can do on our own small levels, I suppose. But anyway, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. I've been speaking to Sharon Raj. She's a Central Committee member from Parti Socialist Malaysia. We were discussing the hits and misses on the Budget 2022 with regard to environmental sustainability. If you miss any part of the interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special was brought to you by Mars Singh. Reinvent spaces, enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.